Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. In January of 2007, the iPhone was launched, forever changing the landscape of communication and socialization. In the mere 7 years since the launch of the iPhone, a whole new generation of tablets and smartphones have provided us with mini computers that are exceptionally mobile and powerful. Computers have become more and more intimate. First, they moved from huge rooms to desktops, and then into our hands and our pockets. Google and others are already testing glasses that have tiny computers in them with built-in screens. These devices and the connectivity they provide are amazing tools that can increase learning and provide hours of entertainment on the go. I can attest that they're great for long trips with kids. They do, however, present a set of complex challenges for today's parents. Today's show is the second in a four-part series that focuses on parenting the modern teen. On today's show, we're going to explore the challenges of parenting during the smartphone era. Joining me today are three of Anchorage's most well-respected adolescent and family therapists. Robert Rhodes is a licensed clinical social worker in private practice at Counseling Solutions of Alaska. His primary work for the last 20 years has been with challenging teens and their families. Whitney Whitman is a licensed professional counselor. She has been working with adolescents and their families in Anchorage for the past decade in residential settings, crisis intervention, and now in private practice. And Dr. Ebony McLean Owens has her PhD in psychology and is a licensed professional counselor. She has a long history of working with teens and families in a variety of settings. She is currently in practice at Bridges Counseling Connection. I want to remind listeners of Line 1 that Dr. Woodard's will continue to bring you the latest information on a variety of health topics 3 weeks a month, and will continue to bring you a monthly show focused on emotional health and wellness. If you have any questions for today's guests or want to share some information or tips that you have found that work for your own family with this topic, you can reach us in several ways. The local phone number is 550-8433. You can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way, as always, is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell all that out. Thanks again, guys, for taking the time to join me again today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
On the first show, we focused, I think, primarily on parental power and some of the challenges and difficulties that enter into adolescence and some of the challenges that parents face. Today, I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to focus on the internet, smartphones primarily, and their capacity and what they've done to change parenting. So I'm kind of interested to start out, like, how did this happen? How did the smartphone era get by us and into the hands of our children?
Well, I think we were talking a little bit as we were preparing for the show here, just hanging out here in the studio, about the fact that they're so convenient and it all happens so fast. And, you know, just with basic cell phones, there was that initial, you know, wow, it's so great to be able to have connection with my kid during the day and contact my kid, or if they need me, they can contact me because I have a cell phone, you know, and it just became a norm in our lives very, very quickly, very rapidly. And there's certain safety and confidence parenting, knowing that you can reach your teenager or your child whenever you want.
Absolutely. It's a great safety device. Anybody else?
Well, I just added the kids are well ahead of the curve relative to the adults. Let's just face it. We're getting onto Facebook, and they're getting off Facebook because they found other things. And,
right.
You know, in 3 years, we'll find Twitter, so to speak, right. and they'll be off launch someplace else. So I'm just not making a joke about it. I mean, I think it's serious. The kids, they are the digital generation, and we are, I'll speak for myself, way behind the curve.
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I know that in sessions, I am frequently shown how to use Twitter or Tumblr. You know, people will talk about, somebody said this to me on Twitter, and they'll show it to me, and I have no idea how to work it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll tell them, well, come show me how to scroll. I have no idea what you're doing. So I think we are behind. I think the kids are way more advanced than the adults.
I had one girl show me Instagram, or no, the Vine, which is the new thing now, and she just showed me, it's like 6-second flash pictures that you can take and post on your thing and mm-hmm. on your Vine, and then it rotates and it disappears, but like it's very complex, and I don't really understand it. Researching this, I found out that I don't know much.
Yeah, right.
And I think the cell phone era, I mean, in reading and researching this, it, you know, the kids got cell phones, and then we all had the internet, and we kind of knew what was going on in the internet, and it was okay, but our kids were watching it on, and looking at the internet on our home computers, on our desktops. And then cell phones and computers merged, and we haven't really, I think, changed how we're dealing with our kids on these smartphones. And that's causing lots of problems. So what are you guys seeing in your offices? Like, what are the problems, maybe the top two or three that are coming up in the clinical setting?
Well, I was surprised. I was thinking about that question earlier, and it reminds me of the 90s when most of the talk in my office was about TV time and how much screen time kids should have with TVs. And
video games.
And yes. I was looking for something more exotic, but really the number one problem coming in is the amount of screen time mm-hmm. kids have. And as it relates to balance, involvement with extracurricular activities, performing well in school, activities with the family, socializing in a more conventional way as we used to think about it, outside, you know, riding bikes, et cetera.
Well, when you talk about time, too, I mean, now in school, they also have what I call screen time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're learning on computers in school. So even if we're not talking about, like, you know, what's the social effect of having access to all of this, if we just talk about the physical or physiological effect of having that much screen time, you know, if you get some time during school and then you come home and you want to do several different things on several different devices, before you know it, you could easily have 5 hours a day looking at screens, and that kind of imagery and the way it affects the brain and stimulates the brain is pretty powerful and intense.
And just to piggyback on that, that's what I see a lot in practice is the kids that get on their cell phone at night mm-hmm. have a difficult time performing at school during the day because they're tired, mm-hmm. because they're constantly in a state of waking up their brains at night. Parents aren't taking the cell phones away at night, and then they're unable to get up on time for school, and they have a difficult time focusing. So I see that quite a bit.
Nighttime texting, is that what you're referring to?
I'm talking about nighttime texting, Facebook, Instagramming, anything that you can do on that smartphone.
Watching music videos.
Watching YouTube.
Watching television mm-hmm. on it. Mm-hmm.
What are some other things that parents are coming to concerned about with regard to smartphones and the internet?
I feel like, you know, sometimes what I hear from parents is that they feel like their children have this private life that they mm-hmm. don't know. They don't know who they're talking to on their phone, who they're texting to. They don't know what they're texting about. And so when their children start to exhibit behaviors that are concerning in their lives, suddenly the smartphone becomes a place where parents want to go and look and say what's going on. And often the children want to covet that because, I mean, like any teenager, you know, you want your privacy. You don't necessarily want your parents peeking over your shoulder at all your conversations with your friends. But when you have a smartphone, suddenly those conversations are in print or in photo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that is concerning for parents is that as they try to stay ahead of the curve, they fall behind because, you know, I get parents that will say, well, they have to give me all of their passwords and I have to check and I do these things. And the kids go and change it. They create a new profile. They deactivate a page. Mm-hmm. You know, parents are just never able to keep up with what their kids are doing on these phones.
One kid told me they deleted their Facebook account because there's too much adult presence. Mm-hmm. That was a direct quote. There's too many grown-ups here. Like, we need to move on and do something different.
It's not
cool.
Well,
I think more commonly they leave that established Facebook and they open up another Facebook.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
The
mm-hmm.
parents don't know about, and all their activity takes place actually on that.
And all the parents' passwords are now old and outdated. Mm-hmm. So...
So one of the things, the terminology is important here, and parents come in my office and they say it's like an addict. Like these kids, they have outrage and anger when you try to limit those, when you ask for passwords. A lot of blowback from kids just being outraged. Like this is some sort of, I think somebody mentioned a right that they have. That's one of the, but as far as like addicted, is that a thing? I mean, what do you think about behavioral addictions as far as like internet, pornography, gaming?
I mean, obviously, that, you know, that's possible. I think what I see more normally in my practice is not that children are actually addicted to their electronics, but more that their electronics offer a freedom and independence. I kind of liken it to, you know, when I had a car when I was 16, and if my parents had taken my car away, I probably would have thrown a big temper tantrum too, even if I knew I was responsible for the reason, because it was my independence and it was my freedom. And I think children nowadays have a ton of independence and freedom through their electronics that they don't want to give up, regardless of what they know they've done to get themselves in the position of losing it. I think that's what I more normally see than a true addiction to that. But it's not to say that addiction doesn't exist.
Anyone else? Thoughts on behavioral addictions? Or, I mean, does this stuff cross over into addictions? Because the definition of addiction, my understanding, or one of them, is that if you continue to exhibit or display, repeat a behavior despite serious negative consequences.
And if you look at it in those terms, then I would say that some of these behaviors could be classified that way. I think what I see most is that, you know, kids suffer, especially adolescent, middle school, high school students, suffer low self-esteem. So where I've seen the addictive quality happen is when all this stuff is happening on Twitter, you know, people are talking about one another, and I'm finding that I get clients that can't stop themselves from looking at what somebody else has said about them,
mm-hmm.
right?
They
from
obsess.
Viewing it. They obsess
over that.
Yes. Or if they have a boyfriend and they broke up, they do the Facebook stalk, or the Twitter stalk is what I call it. They go on and they're looking constantly at this person's page and finding out what they're doing, and they can't stop themselves from doing it.
And I guess, and I'd love to know what you think about the 70, but I guess I've always kind of seen that more as like an obsessive compulsion type of
exactly.
thing, more than a true addiction,
a true
right?
Addiction.
It's
mm-hmm.
like they have this compulsion to keep looking because it's right there at their
it's
fingertips.
Right there at
How
the
could
finger.
You not go look
yeah.
to see
yeah.
what the new answer is to that last thing that you posted, you know?
Exactly.
I also struggle a little bit with the word addiction.
Right.
I mean, true addiction, as we know in the substance abuse field, doesn't respond to parental limits in the classic way. And honestly, I think if parents step up and limit screen time and use these other filters and things like that that are out there on the market, then they can sort of manage the addiction.
What I hear you guys saying is that it's not really addictive necessarily. Maybe in some extreme cases, like with pornography or gambling or something mm-hmm, like that, mm-hmm, some people mm-hmm. can get hooked into that. But it really is more about, to go back to our first show, parental power and reestablishing that authority. And when you first do it, you're going to get some heat, and you're going to get like they are so attached to this instant gratification and this me now, mm-hmm. now, that's what we're seeing.
Their sense of self is derived from what other people say, what other people think, what other people post. So
it's yeah. interesting. You remind me too of, you know, clients I've had who have had their smartphones removed and any other electronics, like they're not allowed to go on the laptop and use Facebook for months. It's usually after some very serious event, right? And mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5, 6 months, they're not allowed to use these electronic devices or these social media. And they don't manipulate like we were talking about. They don't get by, right? They really don't use them. And every one of them says to me about halfway through, like, wow, I feel so much better. I'm so much less
yes.
anxious. I care less what people think. And if they've been having school drama and problems, they're much, much more able to avoid it, to ignore it, to not engage in it. And then the 6 months will go by and they'll have earned the privilege to their smartphones or their social media again. And they'll come back and say, like, I'm on it all the time, you know? I mean, and, you know, I would say the large majority of them are able to make adjustments. They still don't buy into that drama or all that social bullying and all that stuff anymore. However, they also recognize how much time they really spend on it once they've not had it, you know?
Are you suggesting that all parents make their kids turn off their cell phones for like 2 months?
Not necessarily. That would be circumstantial. And
Whitney,
very
Whitney would be running out of town.
For Whitney.
No children want to see me now.
Correct. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guests today are Anchorage therapist Whitney Whitman, Robert Rhodes, and Dr. Ebony McLean Owens. The focus of today's show is parenting in the era of smartphones and social media. I want to remind listeners, you can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. The local phone number is 550-8433, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. The last way to reach us is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Please do feel free to call in or send us an email with questions. We're anxious to hear what people in the community are seeing or hearing from their kids, or what experiences you might have had that were helpful in your family. I think that's one of the things that would contribute greatly. All right, so where were we? Oh, yes. When should you get concerned? When should parents say, oh, this is not normal, this is not okay, it's really interrupting our family life and kids' functioning?
You know what you bring up for me when you ask that question, this is not going to answer your question, is, you know, this idea of being reactive or proactive, right? I mean, if we're going to wait until we're concerned to set guidelines for our electronic use and our children's electronic use, I think we're behind the curve, you know? So I mean, not to take us away from that discussion of what behaviors would tell us we need to set those guidelines, but I would request that parents be more proactive in setting guidelines so you don't have to get to that point where you say, I'm concerned. You know, for instance, if we just talk about the sleep issue, you know, and yes, you should be concerned if your child is starting to look, you know, really tired, and your child who used to perform well academically suddenly isn't performing so well, especially in the earlier part of the academic day. You know, if they're lethargic, if they need to nap suddenly when they used to not nap, you probably want to think about whether or not they're using their electronics in the evening. But you'd be less likely to have to do that if you already had a, like, turn in your electronics policy, which is something I strongly recommend to the parents that I work with, that, you know, come 9 o'clock at night, maybe 10 o'clock, depending upon your child and what their demands are, that, you know, all electronics are checked in and put on a charger, like, in their parents' bedroom, or, like, yeah, you know, in a place where the parents know if they've been taken.
All right, we're going to definitely get more into that. I do have a call on line two. Jenny, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I work with youth, and I just want to know what everyone's thoughts are kind of on the fact that youth are this emotional being, and this is where their brain development is to be social. Mm-hmm. So finding ways to maybe develop guidelines with your youth instead of for your youth, so that they feel a little bit more empowerment, and also find ways that they can, like, buy into your guidelines that you're setting up for them. And also that there are a lot of positive things on social media and on the phones. Like, locally we have the Care Line of Alaska, where youth, if they feel suicidal, they can text for help. Or they can go online and search for really accurate health information.
All right, that's good information. Positive side, or the positive side of social media. I know there's a lot to that. Anybody?
Well, I have some clients who arguably have friends for the first time in their lives, really. Yeah. And it's all over the internet, talking to people all over the world, mainly all over the country. And it's real gratifying to see them have this sort of social connectedness after so long. And that could be related to, you know, excessive shyness or some other sort of conditions. But to me, that's been a real plus. And I think Jenny's right. We want to make sure we don't paint this whole subject in real negative terms. There's a lot of positives related to it and things like that. And I think Whitney was correct when we talk about developing a plan or a protocol from the beginning, mm-hmm. With children. So I have kids come in now and they'll say, I can't get a cell phone until I'm 16. And their parents told them that when they were 7, probably, and it first came up.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's a plan. That's a protocol. It sort of interferes, or it eliminates the parental the parental power issue you were bringing up earlier.
Well, and in our last show about parental power, we talked about collaborating with your children.
Yes.
And, you know, and Jenny, certainly, I think we would all apply that to setting up those guidelines here, that, you know, it's a conversation that needs to be had, and not just like a, this is how it is.
And I know that in practice, I usually work with parents and I talk to them first about allowing your kids to come up with the guidelines first. Mm-hmm. And then we go through the negotiation, because that way the kids, you know, they often feel like, And usually they will make rules a lot of times harder than what their parents were going to make for them.
Yes.
Which is what I love, because if they, you know, start to negotiate it themselves, and then the parents sometimes will say to me, oh, I didn't even think of that. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, don't say anything, because they negotiated it themselves. Leave it on there. If it sounds good to you, let it stay. So I think a lot of times you can work with adolescents to have them create the rules in the house themselves around these electronics, and then you negotiate from there.
Another positive I think about is, you know, I've had teen clients who have researched things themselves, you know, through their smartphones, or, you know, they come to me with new behaviors that they want to try or new thoughts that they have about what their current issues are that brought them to counseling because they've found some support, you know, group that offers information online, or they found a book, you know, or some kind of text online that helped them better understand what it was that they wanted to convey to me, or what was going on with them that they wanted help with. And so, I mean, of course, I mean, one of the best things about the internet is all the information that's available. And I think it's great when teenagers are savvy enough to utilize that.
Let me also add that we have to set an alarm off for the adults as well. We were talking before the show started about families coming into restaurants and they sit down all four and pull out their smartphones and then go to work on that too. So I think we as adults aren't innocent either in this regard in terms of role modeling and things like that.
And one other thing I think of as a positive is, you know, I was just showing my son last night a YouTube video of these two little boys who had started a band. And, you know, one of them was talking about how he often gets criticized for being different. But he feels, you know, really good because they'll go out and they'll perform out on the streets and they'll get positive feedback from people on the streets about the music that they're playing. And the reason why they're considered different is because they play heavy metal music. And nowadays it's cooler to be into hip hop or pop music. Right. And I showed it to my son because he plays drums, and I wanted him to see that there was these other kids that had used that. And I don't know, it's just, I mean, I think that's another positive is you can actually see like documentary footage of other kids in the world going through things that you can relate to just by looking on your phone.
All right, Jenny, thanks for your call and for bringing that up. That's very helpful.
Thanks very much.
All right. I wasn't sure if Jenny was still there because my computer's blank. And I'm not sure. So I don't know if I can take new phone calls if they come in, but we'll figure that out as we go along. All right. Whitney, you mentioned something, excessive cell phone gaming media on the emotional development of a teen. You talked about screen time recommendations from pediatricians and folks for pre-adolescents and adolescents. And as a good point that you brought up, that if you're doing it at school and they're doing it at home, what does anybody know off the top of their head what the recommendations
two
are?
2 hours.
2 hours.
After school. 2 hours after school time. Yeah.
It seems like that is probably exceeded in many homes.
Well, and you know, this is some of the conversation I have with adults too, is this idea that we relax by looking at electronics. And it's like our body may be relaxed, but actually it's very stimulating for our mind. So it's not actually a relaxation skill to use electronics. Although, you know, there's some great, so if we talk about positives from it, you know, some great apps and things that can help you with breathing and mindfulness and meditation. And so that use of electronics is different than sitting and staring at something that has that backlight that's blinking at you. That is not relaxing your mind. And so I think, you know, when we talk about just the physiological growth and development, you know, that type of stimulation, I'm sure, has far-reaching effects. Not being a medical provider, I'd not necessarily be able to go into those.
Right. Well, I know that when we would talk about sleep hygiene in general with a lot of the kids that have depression and anxiety, the recommendation is that everything goes off an hour before bedtime, that it's completely dark, you know, and that you use a sound machine or you use something to help you get to sleep, to help relax you. And if you are on those cell phones or watching television or doing any of those things that are stimulating to the brain an hour before bedtime, it does disrupt your sleep. But I think, as you know, we talked about like modeling for kids as well. Oftentimes we talk about having this 2 hours with the kids, but the parents are on it. I'll get the kids saying, but my mom is on Facebook from the time she gets home from work until the time she goes to bed. So how come I need to get off in 2 hours? You know, so I think as the parents too have to model the behavior.
And then I also want to give parents a little bit of their, you know, power back, like we talked about in the last show, where it's like, well, yeah, but parents drink alcohol too, and we still don't want our kids drinking alcohol. You know, it's like your brain is developing. My brain's not. You need much more sleep than I do. So I do want to give parents permission to have like some of those conversations with their kids where they go, well, yeah, I'm not going to do everything that you, you know, you do. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, I think obviously when we sit down, I was joking with Robert before the show that sometimes I just want to be able to read the news, but I read the news on my phone now. And so I don't read the news a lot of times when I want to, because we're not having screen time in my family at that moment, you know. So yeah, I have to sacrifice a bit.
Well, you're talking about parents and modeling that behavior, and you're right that adults are allowed to have a beer or a glass of wine or whatever, but if an adult is coming home and having a 12-pack every night and their kid's saying, well, why shouldn't I drink? And they say, because I'm a grown-up, I can do it.
Point well taken. Thank you, Brenda.
So, moderation, modeling healthy use of that relationship with technology, I think is important. Well, we can't avoid this much longer. So, we had talked about when you should be concerned, but how much should parents look and monitor their cell phone use, the kids' cell phone usage? Because one of the things I run into is parents trying to do that and kids doing everything they can to not allow their parents to monitor and to look and to manage it. So what's our right? I mean, do we have rights as parents to look at this stuff, or are they right when they say it's none of your business?
I've never subscribed to that philosophy. You know, I think parents should be judicious and not overreact. But, you know, I'm thinking about, I was thinking about this earlier, about our policies towards driving, right? So we have a mandated age that you can't get your driver's permit until you're 14. You have to drive with adults. Even if you got it, then until you can take your test at 16. At 16, you can't have so many people in your car at one time.
Right.
And I think that's probably where we're headed. And I noticed some European countries are already sort of legislating access to cell phones and things like that for youth. And
they are.
And so I think parents, it's back to this reactive versus proactive comment that Whitney made, and that is, I think parents don't have to wait for the state to or the government to, you know, churn slowly in that direction, that they can unilaterally make these rules and implement them. And it just makes sense to do that from the very beginning, I think.
Right. And so that kind of, you know, rule that you're implementing is, okay, I'm willing to get you a cell phone now, but you have to understand that pretty much when I ask you spontaneously walk up and ask you, I want to see your cell phone, you have to hand it over to me. And that's because I want to see what you're doing on it. And I have to have passwords and you can't lock me out of your phone and that type of thing. And, you know, I think if you've been having conversations with your kids and if you're connected to your kids about why it's important to you and the safety ramifications around that ahead of getting them the phone, it's a lot easier for them to understand where you're coming from.
Okay, so the wisdom is that when you start talking to your kids early and you educate them and they have these expectations, I heard somewhere that it's a bad idea to give your kids their own cell phone, that you should have family cell phones and they should go on the family charging station and then you should dole them out in the morning to, you know, the various people based on what they have to do that
day. I like that idea.
I hadn't heard that.
Me either. I love that.
I like that a lot.
I know that. I mean, that's how I think it's important to have like family iPads for that reason too. So I think the smartphones is a great idea.
And there was something you talked about it being a privilege, right? Mm-hmm. To have a cell phone. It's not a right. You're not entitled to have it. And I know that I've had clients that, you know, the parents say, well, I want to be able to keep up with my kid, but they've had all these issues with smartphones. They go back to the old school flip and no access to the internet, you know.
Yeah.
So the kid just gets to have a phone. They can talk to their friends, but they can't do any of that other stuff on it.
That is a good move. When we come back, I do want to, you know, it sounds like if you're doing the stuff up work and you're being, up early, up front, and you're being proactive and your kids are growing up with this, but that doesn't do the 16-year-old, you know, their parents who are battling them much good. So when we come back, I do want to touch on how should they address them. I also want to remind listeners that you are listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. Our local number is 550-8433. You can call toll free at 1-888-353-5752 or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. We did get the screen worked out, so we will be accepting phone calls after the break, so please call in with any questions or comments. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with our guests, Robert Rhodes, Whitney Whitman, and Dr. Ebony McLean Owens. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. In case you're just joining us, I have in studio Robert Rhodes of Counseling Solutions of Alaska, Whitney Whitman, and Dr. Ebony McLean Owens of Bridges Counseling Connection. Today's show is part two of a four-part series that we're doing on parenting the modern teen. This crew of guests and experts will be joining me for the next two as well, hopefully, if all things line up. Part one of the series and all of the Line One archives can be podcast at our website at alaskapublic.org. Just click the link to Line One. Today's topic is parenting in the smartphone era. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard will continue to bring you a variety of health information on Line One, your healthcare connection, three Mondays every month, and I will continue to host a monthly show on mental and emotional health. You can email questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call locally at 550-8433 or toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, if you're listening tonight between 9 and 10 p.m., you will be hearing a taped recording and we will not be accepting calls. So before the break, we talked a little bit about how much should parents look, how much should they poke around and have access to all this information. Whitney, you said that when somebody walks up and holds, the parent says, give me your phone, they should have it and have access to all of it. Everything, your accounts, that's a lot of stuff. And I don't know how parents know what they're looking at. That's part of the problem and why they need to educate. But so that's good. But what if you're one of the lucky parents who has the 15-year-old or the 16-year-old that is really dug into their cell phone and has the upper hand right now as far as they paid for it, they bought it, they paid for their plan, they work a job, they're 16, and they think they can do whatever they want.
Well, and I'll add one more complex thing to that, which is you have the 16-year-old who doesn't pay for any of that, and the parents even disable the phone, but they won't actually give the physical phone, and it still connects to Wi-Fi.
Yes,
so that too. So that's the other complicated issue. Yeah.
I think the answer is the same.
Yes.
So what do you guys tell parents when they come in and they say, Robert, I can't get, little Johnny won't give me his phone or his passwords?
Well, it's usually Big Johnny.
Big Johnny.
Little Johnny's not the problem.
Okay.
You know, kids can take over the family if they want, let's just face it. Whether mm-hmm. it's about, you know, cell phones, driving a car, coming in on time. If they really want to draw the line in the sand and not cross it, they will. And actually, parents have, you know, limited power in that regard. But we're talking about the other 99.9%. And so I think if a parent sets up a reasonable rule that's clear, consistent, applied equally, swift and short consequences that are applied and kept that are reasonable and logical, then I think the power struggle will sort of dissipate fairly quickly.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I guess I see it as if in our family we have gotten to that point where our teenager is doing something or behaving in such a way that we are quite concerned about them to the point where, you know, we're concerned about what's happening on their smartphone and or they're behaving in such a way that we feel like an appropriate consequence would be to remove their smartphone. And they are so entrenched that they absolutely refuse to give in to that. To me, that's a bit of a marker about what's going on in the family mm-hmm. and how the teenager is feeling about their relationship to their parents in general. And the fact that their smartphone and, you know, whatever behaviors they're engaging in that have caused the consequence of having their smartphone removed are more important to them than what their parents think or feel or what their parents want to do with them. And so when I have, a family come into my office with those types of power struggles, what I'm looking at is how do we rekindle the relationship in the family? What's going on in the system? What are the dynamics at play that are causing them to butt heads so hard with their child? Their child is just, you know, deeply entrenched in that stance and will not make movement in it. Because obviously the parents have some concerns. I mean, they're not just taking the smartphone for no reason. Either they're failing or they aren't coming home on time or, you know, there's some other behavior that's causing that, and we need to look at what's happening in the communication and the emotional connection.
So you're saying that if it's at that point, then it's really not about just taking the cell phone, putting it in a closet, yeah. and saying, right. when you straighten up, we'll give it back to you.
Right.
There's deeper issues that probably should be addressed.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think that the power struggles arise, because a lot of times what I see is that there's been this authoritarian model of parenting. So it's either, you know, you do what I say, and it's the consequences are very, very strict. And so the kids are in a rebellious phase, and they're like, you know, this is one thing I have control over. So they're trying to exercise power in that way. Or the families have been completely permissive, and the children have had, you know, a full free reign of the household. And then the parents have come in after and tried to instill these rules later, which also causes conflict. So I think, you know, a lot of times when I see this type of struggle with the cell phone, I work with parents on how not to engage in that power struggle. And let's address what's really happening, like Whitney was talking about, in the family in terms of communication and the dynamics, the relationships, what's actually happening here, because it's not really about the cell phone at that point.
So you wouldn't suggest parents physically tackle their kid and wrestle the phone away from them?
No.
And that sounds funny, but
I think
it happens, though.
It happens.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
even after they've disconnected the service.
Well, right, because like right. I said, I mean, people have disconnected the service and their kids are still able to access pretty much everything they were able to access, even including texting. In fact, the only thing that they can't do if their phones are able to connect to Wi-Fi is make an actual phone call. And I'd even bet you could download an app for that.
Mm-hmm.
Skype and...
Yeah, one of the things that I found in doing this research and educating parents is that a lot of the cell phone service companies, they all have different parental like protection plans and different
mm-hmm.
options, and some of them are very effective and some of them are not so effective. Mm-hmm. So one of the best things parents can do is to call their cell phone providers and check out what their parenting plans are, what the restrictions are available, be it Verizon or GCI or AT&T, because they're all different.
They are, and I would suggest that people research that prior to buying their children a cell phone mm-hmm. if possible, because yes, some of them do have much better, I mean, some of them you can even print out texts, even if your child's deleting texts off their phone, you can go into the computer and print off the texts that are happening.
One of the things that I want to touch on briefly, and I know nobody here really wants to talk about it, but it's the question that I had about the dark web, and I didn't even know that was really a thing until none of us are super educated on this because it is something that is fairly new and it's pretty underground, but I had a friend of mine whose kid was very tech savvy at 16, and he told me that people, and showed it to me, that people are ordering drugs and things online underneath, there's this encrypted, you know, you can get, it's like, he described it as an iceberg. This kid's really smart. And that 10% of the web is above water and the other 90% is below. And that's the part that kids are learning how to access, and that I don't have any idea how to get there or do that. And so I just wanted parents to know about that and to research it and to look for yourself, because kids are actually ordering things online mm-hmm. from other countries mm-hmm. and some of them are very, very dangerous.
When I worked with addicted adults, you saw that just as much, people going in and ordering their drugs offline. So I knew that existed out there. I think it's, you know, I didn't realize that kids were doing it as much as they're doing it now, and I've learned that from a few adolescents of mine as well, that they know how to get the drugs if they really want them.
I worked with an adult once that had a long time ago, well, not that long ago since the internet, but who would tell me that they would get like this, when the FedEx person would pull up, they would start to like have anticipatory mm-hmm. like salivating and getting like really amped up and anxious because of the withdrawal thing. So they were getting shipments mm-hmm. in the mail from FedEx. It's interesting.
It's a total kind of subject changer, but when we talk about the dark web or the dark side of the web, you know, what it brings up for me too is like, you know, when I was talking about printing off texts so you could read your kids' texts, you know, I think it's really important to educate your children prior to giving them a smartphone about what grooming behaviors
yes.
are. And for those of you that don't know what that means, it's when, you know, someone, whether it be a same-aged person or an older person acting like they're a teenager, is talking your child into, is savvy enough to talk your child into saying and doing things. You know, over the internet that they would not otherwise normally do or say. And so, you know, this is how, you know, perpetrators commit all kinds of online child pornography stuff and get children to text them photos of themselves or even just to talk to them in a sexual manner. And I think it's very, very important that our children know, because you could just be playing, you know, a game through an app on your iPhone and there's a chat room in that game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, there's just so many ways for you to have a faceless, nameless person who connects connects with you, and especially when we talk about these children who have low self-esteem mm-hmm. and therefore maybe spend a lot of time kind of escaping that through their isolated electronics, they're really vulnerable to that type of attention and very savvy grooming behaviors.
All right. As always, we're running up towards, we got about 15 minutes left, and we're running out of time. Obviously, we have lots of information. I want to touch briefly on one of the things that parents have a lot of concerns about, and that's the sexting images and suggestive conversations and partially nude or nude pictures. It comes up in my office a lot, and especially it seems to be with young girls in that 14, 15, 16 range, and it's really destructive. What are you seeing in your office with sexting?
You know, I'm seeing that, and I guess I just want to add on to that because, you know, I'm always thinking about this transitional youth age of like 17, you know, on, you know, that I'm also seeing, you know, people posting pictures of themselves mm-hmm. that are sexual in nature because that's where their self-esteem lies, right? And so if everyone can see this, you know, cleavage-bearing shirt that I'm wearing in this picture, then, you know, they're going to like me better. And so I don't think it just has to be the younger set. I think it goes on into young adulthood where, you know, women are learning to object themselves through mm-hmm. online means, and it is disturbing. It's very sad.
Some statistics from Pew Internet Research: 20% of all teens have sent nude pics or semi-nude pics. 22% of girls, 15% sent pics to people they knew only online. 48% of teens say they've received these types of pics. 51% of girls say they did so due to pressure from a boy. I have three daughters, and as always, that really scares me. How do we talk to our daughters and our sons, and what do we do if we find out that's going on?
I know that I often talk with the adolescent young ladies that I work with about just this generational shift of, you know, when I tell her when I was young, it was say it, forget it, write it, regret it, right? And that the things that they're putting out into the world, that they can't take it back, right? They think that they can go through and they can delete these things. Well, those images are out there in cyberspace and they live forever. And if somebody wants to retrieve them, they can go out and retrieve them. So we often talk about like the self-esteem building, the respect and the self-worth and the consequences that can haunt you later on for doing those things. I think, you know, as parents, you have to build your children's esteem. You have to warn them of what's out there, and you have to, you know, of the consequences that are there. But I think the self-esteem piece, the building and having that communication with kids is so important up front, and encouraging them to be open with you and talk about the things that they talk about, you know, with their friends or the text that they might send. Because I have actually had a couple of clients whose parents found out directly from the young ladies after they sent these things. They said, I'm really afraid that I did this, you know. And the parents were really shocked that this was occurring.
I've had that happen a number of times, too, where mm-hmm. the kids were really freaked out and things got, you know, started spreading around. Then some bullying at school. Mm-hmm. Then it got passed around for their schoolmates. And
it's being passed on YouTube, too, which is really interesting these days. When those videos, people are posting things that happen that you think are between you and one person on YouTube.
Yeah, you're not just sending it to one person. And a lot of kids, the ones that I talk to, are sending it to boyfriends or to girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And it's just for their eyes. But most of those are shared in adolescence. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I try to reiterate. And it's not done, I don't think, with ill intent or any, you know, they're not expecting that this will occur, but it does. All right, one more. Cyberbullying. What are we seeing locally and nationally as trends with cyberbullying, and why is it different than regular bullying? I mean, I know it seems like all these issues are stuff that we grew up with. I mean, I think about Playboys when we were young, and mm-hmm. you know, and we get one of those, and you go run off to the treehouse with 14 guys, and everybody's like, woo! You know, like if I had had access to all this information and at 16, I don't know if I would have had the self. Well, I do know I wouldn't have had the self-discipline probably to restrict myself. And my parents probably would have had quite a job on their hands. But Cyberbullying, how is it different? It's like all this stuff is on steroids.
You know, I think lots of people probably already know this, but you know, the difference about having being bullied through electronic media is that you can't really escape it. I mean, yeah. You know, when I was young and I was in elementary school and there was this one girl who really hated me and right. She got everyone in class to hate me, I went home at the end of the day.
That's right.
And, you know, I might have still dwelled on it, but I got space. I got time away, you know. I didn't have to come back until the next morning. And now it's like, you know, I mean, I think some of the worst, it's like we talked about being compulsive and checking things, even though mm-hmm. You know people are saying bad things about you. But what about when texts are just popping in on your phone because someone's given out your phone number and now everyone who's mad at you or thinks that you're a piece of garbage is going to just bomb your phone with texts, you know? I mean, you can't even keep up with that, you know?
Nor do you know who they are.
Right.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. And so I what I really think is different more than anything is that there's no space. There's no time away from it. There's no way to escape that, you know, unless you, you know, just give up your phone yeah. or you stop looking at those things. And that's kind of that seems to be an accurate consequence because, you know, if you're being bullied, why should you have to give up something that's yours? It's not like you've done anything wrong, so to say, right. But you have to protect yourself.
We know that bullying has serious consequences, cyberbullying, regular bullying, but cyberbullying has been linked in the news a lot lately yep. with suicides. Mm-hmm. And I have seen some criminal prosecutions for young teenagers,
yeah.
16, 17, for kids who killed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I think parents really need to talk to their kids about, mm-hmm. that this is not, it's not a joke and it's not funny. And I think with the internet and all this stuff, you get a whole group, you know, sort of mentality, the mob mentality, and people kind of jump on the bullying bandwagon. And then you got one kid at the bottom of this pile. A lot of the kids don't even know them.
And I think that that's part of the problem with the cyberbullying. Like we talked about, you know, when we went to school, you would go to school and a lot of kids, even if they thought something about you, they didn't have the guts to say it,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they would have to say it to your face. And in this day and time, people don't have to do that. They get to hide behind being anonymous online. They get to hide behind profiles. I see people say horrible things to each other on the internet that they might not say if they were looking at you in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's a bigger issue because then you get all of these kids who can say horrible things to each other, encourage other kids to say horrible things to one another. And we know that adolescents are driven by their limbic system, that they're these emotional creatures, that when they're depressed, they're anxious, they're sad, they're living in that emotion. And if you are constantly hounded day after day after day, 24 hours a day, because you can turn on your phone and see it all times of night, much of the stuff happens after parents go to bed. You know,
right.
Kids get on it and bully each other. And, you know, so I think that's the difference. You don't have any reprieve.
One research study suggested or showed that kids send 34 texts a night after lights out on average, mm-hmm. and that 80% of kids are sleeping with their cell phones in their rooms,
mm-hmm.
which is surprising to me that number is that high. I think maybe, and this is my hope, is that we're sort of catching up
mm-hmm.
as adults, and we're starting to put some of these things, some of these restrictions in place, and we're saying our eyes are opening, and we're saying, oh, this is like real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my hope, and that's kind of what's just sort of come into my head now, is we seem to be starting to get it.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Well, and I think those cases you're referring to, I believe the parents didn't even know it was going on until almost after the fact.
Right.
It gets back to Jenny's point earlier in the show about parents staying in touch with their children and having these conversations on a regular basis.
Who wants to tackle the divorced parent or the separated, the family that is... That both of them, I know there's not a lot of time left, but this is one of the biggest problems yeah. I have. Parents
yes.
come in and say, mom and dad on the other house mm-hmm. aren't supporting these cell phone restrictions. They let them do whatever they want, and then this parent becomes the bad guy when they say, give me your phone at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, one parent's always the amusement park parent. That's what I call them.
So what do they do?
Gosh, I know we run into that, and I know you guys run into that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I find it... Sometimes I try to get the parents together
yep.
to set, you know, the boundaries. We talk about rules for both houses so that they can be consistent. Mm-hmm. Because without it, then there is this, you know, kids tend to play parents against one another, too. Both ends against the middle. And that's more likely, you know, when parents don't talk to each other and are not enforcing the rules of the other parent in the other house. And a lot of times I see the parents are just bitter with one another, right, and the kids suffer.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a larger symptom of some co-parenting issues. And I would say, yeah, you'd have to bring those parents together to work through that and see if they were capable of working through it. Some people aren't.
So is it fair to say, and we can kind of wrap that up on this, is that if parents can't get along and can't see past their differences with each other, that the kid's going to run the roost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To some degree.
Well, and they're also actually going to suffer developmentally because, right, you know, kids really crave and need consistency and structure even through adolescence, even into young adulthood. Do they want that? No, that's not what they want, but that's what they need.
Yeah. So parents, if they're not getting along, figure it out, right? Is that what you're saying?
Just seek professional help.
Seek professional help. Put aside the personal differences, because that's so often what I see is they're just ingrained in their own differences, or they don't like the step-parent. Or
they disagree with each other's parenting philosophy.
Exactly, which is kind of what brought them to that place.
Right, and that's okay, but we can negotiate through that. It is possible to negotiate through that and come to some agreed understanding of a little bit of this person's and a little bit of that person, so it's consistent across the board. It is doable. It's absolutely something that can be worked through.
But you also mentioned the introduction of step-parents, and that just complicates it, of
big
course.
Time.
It is
adding more people to the picture.
Yeah, one of the, I guess one of the main problems that I face in my office, and I guess it goes across all parenting stuff, not just this, and in our next show we're going to talk about more serious behavioral problems, drug abuse, running away, violence, that kind of stuff, and the same rules apply, and the number one thing is parents getting together and coming up with a parenting plan.
When it comes to divorce, I mean,
when it
absolutely
comes to divorce.
Well, and even in a biologically married home, yeah.
So you guys mentioned, Whitney, you mentioned an electronics plan or for your family.
Mm-hmm.
What would you elaborate a little bit more on that for parents, like moving forward from here? I had a parent, one of the most effective interventions is their kid was screaming at him about their cell phone, and they said, I am sorry I have failed you on this cell phone thing. We are going to start over.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And yeah. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
So a plan, what does that mean? How do you come up with that?
Well, it's kind of what Ebony was talking about earlier. I mean, collaborating with your child, asking them what do they think should be the starting point, and what are the limitations, what are the expectations, and, you know, more importantly, what responsibilities do you have to engage in order to earn and maintain this privilege? And what types of behaviors would cause you to lose this privilege, or for this to no longer be something we trusted you with? So I think that's, you know, we're back to communication and collaboration, and, you know, we're also back to being proactive and trying to, you know, come up with those things from the get-go, if possible.
Anything else on parenting and family plans? When should we introduce kids to cell phones? Does anybody have? What age?
Whitney and I were talking about this before the show, and we both said 14.
14. I would agree with that. I've seen a child as young as, I think, maybe 7 or 8,
yeah,
riding a bike with a phone, and I thought that's ridiculous.
You know, we have to be clear that the child at 14 with a cell phone is going to have different privileges with that cell phone than the child at 16 and,
yep,
the child,
right,
at 17. So it's sort, yep, of progressive in that regard, in terms of the privileges available. So it's just not give the child the cell phone at 14 and off they go.
Mm-hmm.
Does a lot of their privileges and their freedom and how much you look at their stuff really depend on what kind of behaviors you're seeing from them day to day?
Well,
kids?
I would say so, but then, you know, I think it's about what kinds of conversations are you having with your children to, you know, regardless of their behaviors. I mean, some kids are very well behaved and have a very secretive life that their parents know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
So just because your kid's getting good grades.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that
polite,
they're not sending, you know, sex photos, right? Yeah.
Okay, we are running up against the wall here, so I'd like to get any parting comments or last bits of information that you want to give out to parents.
I'd say be proactive, not reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Be vigilant. Talk to your children. Develop this protocol, this plan early on. Educate yourself. Be a good role model in the use of these kind of electronics. It is a privilege also that needs to be taken into account. And then make use of the technology out there that helps you with this, the GPS monitoring, the filters that are available, the restrictions that you can put on through these various cell phone plans, et cetera.
I agree with everything that Robert said. And I think that you also want to talk to your kids before you ever get them that cell phone about here are the guidelines for this cell phone use, right? Maybe before you ever get the cell phone when that child is 14, sit down and make the rules then for what it's going to be, as well as the consequences, and have them be in that conversation. So that way there's no surprise when they do violate these terms and that cell phone gets taken. Hey, we created these rules together.
And I guess the only other thing I would add on to all of that, because I agree with everything that you've both said, is explain to your children why this is such a big deal to you, why it matters to you that you're involved in their electronics to this degree, that you're not just trying to be controlling, that you care about them and that you care about what can happen and you care about their safety, their emotional well-being and their physical well-being, and you care about their self-esteem, and that all of these things can be impacted if you as a parent don't monitor these. And, you know, that you look forward to the day when they're on their own and they're monitoring it all themselves. And it's your job to teach them how to do that. So, you know, I think kids like to have reasons. They like to have rationale. They don't want you to just be like, just because it's it.
And I love that you said that about the safety versus control, because I run into that quite a bit, right? Yeah. And once the kids say, oh, you're just doing it because you love me and care about me and because you want me to be safe, not because you hate me and you want to control my life, they have a very different response. So
yeah, it's a little easier.
Yeah.
Okay. My thanks to today's guest, Robert Rhodes from Counseling Solutions of Alaska, Dr. Ebony McLean Owens from Bridges Counseling Connection, and Whitney Whitman. If you would like to continue today's conversation, you can join KSK on Facebook. You can find the link on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can let us know your thoughts about today's show at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. The thing that struck me when I did this research for the show is how little I actually really know. I want to really encourage all parents to go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on the link for today's Line One show. You'll find a wide variety of links that will help you begin the process of really educating yourself about these powerful devices and how you can protect your children. It's up to each of us individually and as a parent group, I think, to assist our kids in developing a healthy relationship with this technology. So why not put away your phones and devices and make your kids do it too? Set aside specific times for computer use and develop an electronics plan for your family. It will improve your kids' mood and behavior and possibly that of your own. Dr. Woodard will return next week when his guest will be licensed clinical social worker Josh Arvidson of Anchorage Community Mental Health. They will be exploring the impact of early childhood adversity and stress on lifelong risk for mental and physical health. So why not tune in to Your Health and learn more Monday, December 2nd at 2 o'clock p.m., repeating at 9 p.m. on 91.1 KSKA Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer of Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Thanks for sharing this hour with us. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.